Antonio X with Commander Q.
36 X 3 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 Thank you. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. Side 2 of this tape. It's it's 10:31 p.m. Still Saturday night, and I'm making my way slowly across the playa. First is at the Emerald City, and people there are really interesting. Older, in the 50s. One in particular wrote a book called Pyramid Power, and he was telling me about the sacred geometry. And, I don't know, it was like really egghead stuff, but I'm seeing as I haven't seen before. That there's a relationship between art and mathematics. I need to piss. I'm going to. Nice and relaxed. Pissing on the playa. There is so much fucking here, it's ridiculous. I feel like I'm doing it better this year. I have my water lung, whatever it is, water bag, freshly borrowed. Flashlight sticking on my bag. It's not pointed. I don't feel the need to be a totem all the time this year. I know that it's home, as much as I need to be home. It'd be a nice night to trip, except, I don't know. It's a thought. Approaching something. right structure. Perhaps not all put together. Large pieces of different kinds. Boards and stuff for a camp. It's not yet been assembled. Anyway, I'm already pretty well acclimated. It's a changing, evolving thing. It's not like it stays the same, but I'm over the hump, I think. I mean, I helped with unloading the truck today, and I dealt with Chuck Nichols' peculiar personality. He probably would say I have a peculiar personality too. So, I guess we're kind of even on that. And there's another guy there. Sean said, this year, those of us who were there last year have a better sense of how Chuck thinks and how he works. And so, it aids not having to start from square one. Alex Chamon, he's a cool guy. Anyway. So here I am on the playa, and there's not a lot going on, but it's funny that, like, Monday night of last year's Burning Man, it was the first official night, and shoot, this is fucking Saturday night. It doesn't begin for two more days. But people are already here in force. It's not the population that it's going to be, but it's, there's a lot of shit up. There's a lot of shit happening. People at the Emerald City are going to fire off their lasers tonight. I'm trying to keep that Emerald City marking. So, I mean, I guess that last year I went through it. Went through a lot of different kinds of mental and physical spaces, and I can't do that again. I mean, I can't be that scared, I can't be that confused, I can't be that alienated. This place is right. I belong here. I belong here as validly as anybody else is here. And so that's fine. I mean, I'm not scared here. This is not Boston. This isn't anywhere in the world that exists right now. At least in the Western world. And probably most of the entire world. This is something different. At the same time, it's also something old. Very, very old. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to all the circumstances and people and whatever, and to myself for knowing I had to come back and for coming back. I made it. My tent and my stuff, my art contribution, I brought it all, man. I ran through a gamut of doubts, especially toward the end, but it went fine. It went fine, and just checking to make sure the tape is moving. In its bag, which is good. It's an unusual approach to the thing, but a good one, I think. I feel like I'm picking up where I left off, and yet I feel that the year in between is completely connected to last year's event and this year's event. I mean, I earned my way back here. I earned my way here in the first place, but in a way I had help. I was leaning on things, and I was leaning on Mia, I was leaning on Emerson College and tuition money, and all sorts of things got me here and helped me. This year, I got here on my own. I got here on my own. I worked at fucking a 40-hour job and went through the fucking ringer to get back here. And I spent a lot of fucking money to get back here. And I'll spend the rest of it if I have to. I'm coming to believe in something, and it's scary to believe in it because it's potent and magical and elusive and... It's weird, it almost makes you want to cry, but not sad, not anything like that. It's just a thousand fucking stars up above, and millions of them, and millions that can't be seen, but they're here, and it's good. All is good. All is good. And I'm just grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be part of this. It hasn't even really begun. I mean, this is all kind of... I don't know. I don't know what you'd say. It's building. It's building the city. The festival hasn't officially begun. But, you know, it's... I don't know. There's a neat sort of inside sense to it that you can arrive on Friday night and then definitely Saturday, and it's 2 days before the festival. But there's shit already here. And you're in, you get your space, you start building. You get into it, you don't rush, you don't worry about it. You take it a bunch at a time. And one good thing about the building at the camp today was that there was no panic. We took breaks. We worked hard and then we took breaks and we chilled and we laughed. And last year, I don't think there was as much of that kind of thing. There was this sort of desperate plunge toward getting the thing up, and it had to be up quickly, and it had to be upright, and there was a lot of rigidity and a lot of unreasonable and unrealistic expectations of what's possible and what one should even be gunning for. And this year, there's more... There's still expectations and there's still ambition, but I don't think it's... I think it's of a tempered kind. I think it's nicely tempered with... the possibilities of good and bad luck and just weird shit that will happen, and it will happen one way or another. So why fight it? Flow. I'm not scared here. I'm not scared. I was scared last year. I thought that this was like too many kinds of other things, and now I see that this is its own thing. This is its own thing, and other things are like it. I think Big Cypress, I think Fish's Big Cypress event in Florida last December 31st and thereabouts, I think it was based around Burning Man. I have no evidence for that other than at one point Trey Anastasio mentioned Burning Man briefly in an interview, but I do think that Fish built the city for its kids, for its people. And it came off wonderfully. It blew them away. I don't think they've been able to top it, which is why they're going on break after the end of October or whatever, for fall tour. They don't know how to participate in some of the things that they've set in motion because they don't want to keep doing the same old thing. They want to keep moving forward. And I think they're right. I don't have anybody to talk to in my ordinary life in person who understands what it is that I'm doing, per se. I mean, they don't go to events like the ones I do. They don't pursue the things I do. They do their own thing, which is fine, but... I come here and... It's all understood. So many of the things that I can't even convey minimally are completely understood. Everybody understands the sacrifice to get here. Everybody understands the importance of being here.
Everybody understands how much fucking fun it is to be here, and everybody understands how fucking magical it is to be here. It's like, we are worthy of this. I'm approaching, by the way, a pyramid, which is lit by green lights, and I don't know if there'll be anybody there, or music. I don't really know what I'm going to find tonight. I mean, it's 2 days to the event, so I don't know what I could possibly expect, but I'm just trying to find, you know, where people are making noise and laughing, see what happens. I don't know if I'm on the trip tonight. It's been,2 weeks, I think. 2 weeks, maybe? Three? I don't know. It's been at least 2 weeks. And, I'm just thinking of holding off. I feel like I want to take this in a certain mindset, and I don't want to be spun. Oh, I see. The platform. I'm just going toward voices, hoping that, you know, we're supposed to be finding something. I'm basically crossing the plyo. Totem's on one end of it. Tunnel Club Brain is its address, which is on one end of things. And, music. There's a pyramid. There's, I don't know, what looks like sort of a giant face. It's a very strange event. From any kind of a mainstream society point of view, it is a very strange event. It's fun, but it's fun in a... It's like fish shows in a sense that it's fun in a peculiar kind of way. It's fun in a way that is not ordinary. Not easy, even. It's fun in a way that lasts. It's fun in a way that haunts. I feel like I'm getting a sneak preview tonight, which is sort of what I'm going for anyway. I'm so glad I got here early. It's ridiculous how glad I am I got here early. By the time the event begins on Monday and it begins to, well, it continues, I guess, to build up, I'll be cool. I'll be alright. I took a shower today. Learned how to do that. In a porta potty. I have all the material items necessary. The only thing I'm going to run low on eventually is water, but Chuck has brought a 500-gallon water tank, which he's going to get filled tomorrow, I'm presuming. And that will take care of that. I kind of feel like I want to participate in the city, and some in Totem and some in the city, and some on my own. Just sort of different ways, different levels, different kinds of things. I'm not scared, and I want to continue to not be scared. I suppose I continue to not be scared by flowing. Pyramid seems to have some really good music inside of it. So if it's open, I think I'm going to go into the pyramid. All I can say is so far so good. That's all I can say right now. I'm probably just gonna fill this fucking tape and have more. It's all good. I'm not tripping right now, but I feel like I am. That's what Burning Man's like. It makes me feel good in a way that tripping makes me feel good. Sacred fun. Sacred fun.
Awesome pyramid. It's beautiful. I love it. Was it here last year? I said I remember some kind of structure similar to
what these. All kinds of pyramids.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome. It's awesome. You got a lot of work left on it? A lot of stuff to do with it?
I think inside they have to finish the inside.
Yeah. Cool. Have a good night. I don't know, flow led me into that
camp and it wasn't very interesting. People standing around and talking. So Flo led me out of the camp, which was good too. Still see where switching to eventually I'm gonna get tired again, but not yet. I'm gonna go to Totem and say hello to everything there eventually before turning in. I'm glad to be free of the hard work I was doing, but I want to learn something from all of this. It was hard work, it sucked, I didn't bring everything I wanted to bring, but it brought the most important of what I wanted to bring. I line in the sand where those 11 books, those 11 titles, and I brought them in force. And that's what matters. I think even here there's a membrane that needs to be breached. I think it's more likely it will be breached. We breached all the time. But it exists. And it's not something that can be ignored. But it's not something that has to be a stopper of things. I wonder where Mio is. I want to see her. I don't know what I'll say to her. I guess it'll all depend on her trip and how it went, but I'm not, I want her to know I'm happy she's here. That's all. And I think that's probably what it will come down to in the end. I think if she knows that, that'll be fun. That'll be enough. I don't think I have a lot of other things to say to her. But, you know, maybe we'll talk at some point. That'll be nice. I don't know. Okay, so I'm approaching a giant mask whose eyes have flames coming out of them. It's a big-ass fucking mask. It's fucking beautiful. It's like the burning face, or the burning eyes. It's very impressive. that the fires that are coming out of the eyes are fueled by gasoline or something. So they come out steadily.
Ah.
Kind of dune buggy thing went by. Like 30 feet high. It's still on. Second. Three-sided mask.
Three-sided mask.
Three-sided mask. I wonder if fire's going to shoot out of the other two masks eventually, too. So, here's the thing. I don't think drugs are going to be a problem in acquiring this year. I think that somehow last year, that was kind of my theme, consciousness expansion, mind altering. And it went really, really well. And this year my theme is girls. Girl. And to be honest, I don't know how that's going to go. But my focus is not on LSD. I have LSD. And I'll find more. I'm sure the guys at the camp next to me, I mean, I'm not positive, but they have a lot of money. I would bet they have a lot of drugs. It's women. It's some girl. I don't know if I'll find her here, and I don't know what she'll be to me or I to her. But, that's what this year is about. It really is. And, I know that. I want her to be as crazy as I am, but I want her to be someone I can really rock with. I don't want her to be so fucking insane that I don't know. Trust is important. More weird music. Burning Man changed my musical taste. I never listened to techno before Burning Man, and now I listen to it a lot. Techno and rock and roll are sort of my two favorites now. Techno and Fish. So I really don't know, like, what else to do now. Saturday night, but it's a weird Saturday night. It's the Saturday night of beginnings, not even ongoing. I'm glad I walked around somehow. I need a bike. Big fucking time. I think that my best bet is to go back to Totem. I feel tired and my energy is dragging. Am I being cowardly or whatever, or am I just acknowledging that the place isn't begun yet? I don't know. I guess I just want to go to sleep. Or at least not be walking much anymore. I'm tired. It's good. It was the first foray. That's it. There isn't really a whole lot else to do. But it's leaping forward. That's no doubt or not. It's leaping forward. Well, I guess that's it for this tape. It's going to run out any minute now, I guess. It's covered the first two of my 11 days. Got some Burning Man radio in there. I think every day that I'm here that I sleep and eat, I'll get stronger. Landmark is a distant yellow fluorescent pole. Good landmark, though. Possibly get spun tomorrow night. Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Tempted tonight, but no. Still acclimating. Still. Still getting there. But doing all right. Been all right. Getting closer. Learning, I believe. Learning to fly. I already feel revived.
X-Wing Commander Q.
36 X-Wing Commander Q.
Commander Q. In spirit,
Alright, it's 12:54, excuse me, 12:55 p.m. That previous entry was about an hour ago. I was on the phone with Cassie. She was getting us fish tickets for July at Great Woods, a.k.a. Xfinity Center, down in Mansfield, Mass. We haven't seen fish since 2016, which was the last time they were at Great Woods, and they haven't been in the New England area since. They didn't tour in 2020, of course, and 2021, they didn't tour in New England, so, and I think 2019, possibly a couple before that, they didn't either, because if they'd come to Worcester or anywhere I could have gone to see them, I would have, but they're coming to Great Woods, and we're going to see them. That's really good news. We're getting something called a rally bus, which you've gotten before. The way the rally bus works is the company offers transport to an event, provided that enough people sign up and pay for tickets on the bus to make it profitable for the bus. So they've got to, like, have a minimum number of passengers for the bus to actually go. And so they've got a ways to go with this one, but I have no doubt they're going to fill that bus. So that's good to think about for July. I am now going to give my toes a little bit of Amerigel for to keep them from getting too dry, and zip up my stuff, put on my boots, and be on my way. I will no doubt talk more later on this, but for now, getting ready to go, finally. Okay, it's probably still Saturday, May 5th, 2022. It's near 5 p.m. I'm now outside of the room I was staying in. I've been at the New Britain Public Library for several hours, mostly writing labyrinthine. Listening to a great album by Low called Double Negative, which suited very nicely the 5 grams of mushrooms I ate via pill form. So I'm super high in New Britain, which is nice. I've been this way before here. Part of the part of the plan. On Myrtle Street, by the way. So I was writing, and then for a long stretch I was taking pictures with Gumby. So I'm walking to Capital Lunch now, and I've been thinking about the Remember Some Things theme. It's different for fictional characters than it is for me, strangely, even as I'm kind of a semi-fictional character in my own stories. I mean, in them, but I'm also outside of them, I suppose you could say. So for me, remembering takes on, I guess it's like a inside the utopia and then outside the utopia. Inside the utopia is far more interesting, as far as I'm concerned. Outside the utopia is just my own biography. And I came down here to New Britain, to Connecticut, which is where I'm from. And I'm still trying to figure out, or I'm not trying to figure out, I'm just sort of like, I come down each time, and here I am. And what I have is, I have this ongoing relationship with Connecticut, where I was born, and the funny thing about it is that I left here long ago. In fact, I left here twice, because I moved back for a year, but then I left again and I haven't come back. And then the people that I knew and loved along the way, I mean, it's kind of dried up. I don't have anybody I visit anymore, and this has been so for many years. I essentially come down to visit places to write. Some of them are eateries. Some of them are just, you know, not eateries. Like, I was at the New Britain Public Library. That's not an eatery. But it's a nice place, and I set up shop there and write. It's nice to write there because it's quiet, and it's always there. And they haven't torn it down and rebuilt it, thank goodness, like they did in did with the Harvard Public Library, for reasons I still can't even, I can't think to imagine why you would tear down a library and then replace it with a library. Like, why couldn't they have just expanded what they had or built on it or whatever? Like, why did they have to tear it down to the ground? Was that necessary? But they did it, and it's now several numbers of years, I don't know how many years ago, like, in my memory, in my thinking, it's like yesterday, but really, they did it some years ago. It's not a recent thing anymore. So anyway, places is where I come, and I come to write stuff, but new stuff. I'm not coming down here to be sentimental. It's like I come down here as though I still live here, and I'm writing the things I'd be writing, which is weird because I wouldn't be writing them if I still lived here. Say the old Stop and Shop and liquor places now become Planet Fitness, Key Food Supermarket, and Fun City Trampoline Park. Holy fucking shit.
Daniel X with Commander Q.
36
Jesuit Commander Q.
It's 6:08 p.m. People's Donut Shop, my table, over in Connecticut. I don't know if I've ever recorded a volume's entry from here, but I think this is a good place for a little bit of ambience for a stretch. So here goes.
I'm
keep writing bags of news through it all.
Our tribal drum. So we had a kind of a secret communication going in the river of music that flowed through us. You know, it was a wild liberation. It was Dionysian. And drugs played a big part in that.
We smoked a lot of pot and a fair amount of acid. You know, the society that we're rebelling against, they don't want to smoke pot.
Must be a good reason to smoke pot.
The more that we as a generation saw that what had been rammed down our throats was false, it was a lie, the more it freed us up to experiment. I mean, we had free will. Still allowed us to just go to a party and be with somebody. We just reveled in having that much freedom and that much ability to piss off your old man.
We're looking for someone on two screens at the opposite end of the familiar. They consist of the color sequences of age and appearance of different color witnesses spread across the screen. Sexual misconduct was good. The smell of marijuana was prevalent all over the entire area.
By 1969, it really did feel like we were finally winning some kind of cultural war against the establishment. You know, this is how we lived, and if you didn't like it, too bad. We were seeing that America wasn't what we were taught it was. And when you stop looking at that way, and you start trying to figure it out for yourself, then it changes your life forever.
We're here at the Museum in Bethel Woods, which is located on the exact site where Woodstock was.
And this is that site of the pilgrimage of Yankee music. That is so important.
Hi, I'm Laura Sabine. I'm here with Gene Honda.
10:22 p.m. Midroof M, Route 120.
Back at the festival that defined a generation.
Something on PBS about Woodstock, but now they're asking for money, so I'm going to hit this pause now for a while. So I come back.
Viewer discretion is advised.
Once they got permits, they made it to the town of Boston. The first thing that John Bill and Michael Carr did was to assemble a core team to help produce a festival. There was Stan Goldstein, who had worked with Michael on Miami Pop, John Morris, who had experience looking at that, Chick Monk, whose role was stage design, lighting, Bill Hanley, one of the pioneers of event production. These are guys who knew how to put together an event. Stan called his friend Mel Lawrence to be the director of operations.
My mission was to plan for all functions
of the festival aside from the actual show. Everything from incenses to food, to transportation, to fire access, lines of communication, security, water, sewage, you know, this, that. I made a checklist that blew everybody's mind.
One specific thing was toilets. We knew we'd have to have a lot of them. No one knew how many. So, they began going to events with stopwatches on board, Madison Square Garden, baseball stadiums, any place that there were a lot of people. And I tried going in, coming out, and going in, coming out. I took all the information I gathered, multiplied by the size of the crowd we thought we might have, and came up with outrageous numbers of Johns, tens of thousands, just impossible numbers. So we lined up as many as we could get.
I was in charge of the book and cleaning. So there's a great brand new window. And then we got Jefferson Airport, one Cocker, and 10 years after. We didn't get the Stones, Dylan, or the Doors. In fact, we booked a lot of the acts we wanted to, including the Who of Jimi Hendrix.
We had just started planning our first tour as Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. When we heard that Hendrix was going to play it, and Who, and Fly, and Airplane, the band, the Grateful Dead, you know, everybody that we thought was cool.
They needed to get the word out about the festival. They had a channel to do that through the alternative press. There was the Burger Bar, there was Rat, and the Village Voice, and word about the festival poured out, not just to New York, where they thought they would draw the most people from, but all across the United States. Woodstock was on everybody's list.
Love is coming to us all.
Tom and I subscribed to Rolling Stone magazine, and long about early May, I started seeing these ads for a 3-day festival with all these bands that we love. And Tom, you want to go to this?
We heard it on the radio. They were describing this happening to them, and that people were coming from all corners of the United States and apparently here as well.
J'avais juste 20 ans, et j'étais passé une fois. J'avais été bienvenue anglaise, Musical Express, et Melody Maker, et d'annoncer ce festival de Woodstock. Automatiquement, mon objectif numéro 1 était d'aller à Woodstock.
Als ich 69 nach Amerika kam, das war ja noch nicht so lange, ich war 23 Jahre alt. Und es war nur auch eine Kollegin, dass da jetzt ein großes Konzert in Praia geplant ist, wo ich Lust hätte mitzukommen. Ich hatte überhaupt keine Vorstellung, was es gar nicht so in New York und Manhattan interessiert. Ich war ja erst 3 Wochen da.
I was hanging out at the fountain in Washington Square with my guys, all musicians. And then all of a sudden, tickets were being made available. You could buy 1 day, 2 days, or 3. And geez, 3 days. Wow, that means staying there over. Wow, what an adventure that would be. We gotta do this.
It was early June. So they started to build half the wall across the site. They brought in electricity. They started to lay the groundwork for a stage, and they hired a couple hundred kids to help out. And these kids, they didn't look like anybody else in this town. They were a little suspicious about us, but we just forged ahead. All that did was, I guess, sound the rallying cry for what called itself the Concerned Citizens Committee of Longville. They didn't like the looks of the people who were working on the site.
They didn't like long hair, rock music, and all that that applied to them. We really tried to practice good community relations, but the concerned citizens had the wind up.
Wallkill was a pretty conservative place, the way they saw it. These were kids who smoked dope, who had casual sex. They didn't want these hippies in their town.
John and I were having dinner in New York City when the town of Wallkill passed an ordinance saying you can't have a gathering of more than 5,000 people. Essentially, it just legislated the possibility of a festival on this property out of existence. But we'd already sold so many tickets and hired so many bands, we couldn't turn back at that point.
It was like they had a roller coaster that just crested the rise, you know, before that first enormous plunge. I contemplated the abyss of a total wipeout, and but let's not get by back to zero. Let's throw this special.
It was the first week of July, about 5 weeks out. So there was a mad scramble to find a new site. They drove around upstate New York, talking to local people, real estate brokers, anyone who would listen.
Mike and I, we must have left for a week within 10 days. Renting helicopters, going here and going there. Then we'd meet Max Yazdi.
Max was a client, and he was very successful. His dairy supplied almost everybody in that area with milk. Everybody knew Max Yazdi.
Yasser was he was a law and order Republican.
But he also believed in personal freedom and freedom of expression, and that's what he hung his hat on.
I see that. Can we just hit it off? I think he liked the fact that we were doing something in the face of a lot of adversity that we believed in.
Max takes us to the top of this hill, and there it is. That's the land here. Michael and I looked at each other.
This was exactly what they were looking for, and they made a deal with Max right there on the spot.
Joel and I went up to get some kind of a handle on the town and politics. We sure didn't want our kids to do the same problem there as we had in Wallkill.
We were asked to fill out our attendance expectations for the permit application. We used Monterey Pop's record of 28,000 people a day receiving an event as the baseline. We multiplied it times two and said, you know, our wildest dreams, this is what we're hoping for. And within a couple of days, we got our permits.
A sign is erected near our house. It said something like, don't buy Yasser's milk, he loves the hippies. And I thought to myself, you don't know Max, because we're going to have a festival.
He was
talking about
everyone felt excited about the possibilities of this site. There's a lot to be done.
We'd start all over again to construct what we had built in several months in Wallkill, in less than 4 weeks.
Half a million of the old site was all down the drain, right? We'd have to put another $800,000 into this one. Building a stage, getting the lights and sound system up, fences, food concessions, portable toilet. I mean, this is extraordinary. But Joel and I had never done any of this before.
But because of ticket sales, we actually felt that we were going to turn a profit.
They knew by this time that there were going to be more than just 50,000 people. Ticket sales looked like it was going to be closer to 100,000. And with 100,000 stoned-out kids, they knew that there could be some difficulties.
There's been some
some trouble at a few of the pop festivals. What do you think brings that about? Why won't it happen at one place and not another?
You know, I really don't know. Like, in Miami, they broke down the fence, and they had a lot of fights.
You think it has anything to do with the size of the audience?
It has to do a little bit with the size. It has more to do with the way the festival is organized.
Didn't see what was going to be happening. We sent people to almost all the major rock festivals that summer. They went to Atlanta, they went to Denver, and they went to Newport. And everyone, there were problems. There were tear gas, there were violence in Los Angeles County. Some of them back in New York, they kept insisting that they need to have security people for safety. I told John, all the cops in the world weren't going to prevent violence. It had to depend upon building the kind of expectation and the feeling that this event we're going to have so that people didn't want to hurt each other.
We also knew that there would be a lot of drugs around, and there would be a lot of people who couldn't handle whatever it was that they were going to take, and that that had to be dealt with as well.
My name is Hugh Rodney, and I'm going through a series of changes in this spare room at the Electric Circus store. What is essentially on the front of my brain is this hog farm poster, which we're going to be moving all around the country, we being a commune.
Stanley Goldstein suggested that we look to this, this commune called the Hog Farm, and that we should bring as many of these folks to the festival as we can and have them handle our security. So he went and met with a fellow named Hugh Ronk, also known as Wavy Gravy.
We've been driving around the country putting on these shows. We had a certain skill with working with large crowds. We were a happening. So Stan Goldstein showed up and says, how would you guys like to do this music festival in New York State? And we said, it sounds like a good time, but we're going to be in New Mexico. And he says, that's all right. We'll fly you in an Astrojet. And indeed, 85 of us boarded this American Airlines Astrojet going to Woodstock.
We all arrived at the Albuquerque airport, loaded up a couple of sets of TV poles, and flew off to New York.
The stewardesses locked us up in a little room, and we just took over the plane. We got to New York City, piled off the aircraft, and there was the rest.
What is the hog farm going to be doing in Woodstock? Well, the hog farm is the main stage, we're kind of a family, a huge expanded family. We can do any number of things, and each one of us is going to do a different thing. But mostly we're just going to try and be groovy and spread that groovy to everybody. Oh, the hog farm has been hassled by security people, and they're calling you security people, so how do you feel about the name? Well, I feel secure. I don't know what security people mean. I never was told a security person before. In fact, you're the first person that's ever called me that. How you feel?
Well, I feel...
You feel secure?
There was a picture in the Post the next day. Yeah, my father called and said, nice cops you hired. He thought that I was really out of my mind to be involved in this thing.
Stay tuned. There is so much more coming up. But right now, we're at the Museum of Bethel Woods, located on the original site.
Daniel X with Commander Q.
36
contains content which may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer discretion is advised.
We're a small town. We'll never have all those people here. They'll never be here. I didn't believe it.
That's all you heard on the radio. Woodstock. How about the Woodstock? We're all laughing. Guy from the East. Look out, this might be something that we thought. I've been here all my life, They talk about hundreds of thousands of people and so on and so forth. We never saw that this time.
There was a certain backlash, but mostly, instead of the yelling, little buzz from the locals.
We started to hear rumors that this thing was more or less out of hand because no one knew the amount of tickets that were sold. One time they said 25,000, and it was 50,000, and they don't know, and it got to the point where we started to get a little worried about it.
Then all of a sudden people started showing up.
About a week before they started showing up in small groups and camping and so on. And the thing that Max and I were trying to figure out is they hadn't gotten the fence around the field. And we thought, boy, they better rush and do that if they want to sell tickets to this thing.
Last week, if we saw what was going on, you were immediately aware that you couldn't possibly finish the time. On Monday, everything was in a state of preparation, roughly on target for a festival to be thrown sometime in November, and not the one that was supposed to begin in 4 days.
We showed up 3 days before the festival opened because that's what we were supposed to do as food handlers. We strolled together at the last minute, so we had to build our own food stands before we landed.
We had to run into a lot of different food concession people, and all of them, the legitimate guys, went by the wayside when we lost Walter. What was left was an outfit called Food for Love. There were three of them, three guys. I think one of them had some kind of food catering experience. I don't think the other two did. But we didn't have any alternative.
I think it was Tuesday when the construction foreman told us, we should have enough time to finish everything. So which would you like to have us finish, the gates and the fences or the stage? We don't have enough men and material to do both. I remember thinking, if we don't have gates and fences, then we're not going to collect tickets, we'll be bankrupt. And if we don't have a stage, we'll be in jail because there will be 100,000 kids running around with nothing to do for 3 days. So that was the answer. The answer was build the stage.
I go there in the middle of the night and people were building the stage. It was going 24 hours.
There was obviously so much to do and so little time to do it. We had all come to realize that all of our individual jobs were going to be left somewhat undone. So we all kind of banded together in one sort of SWAT team, trying to run around and finish.
I quit my job at the restaurant, Ocean City, no notice. I just told them that it wouldn't be in anymore. Why? Don't do Woodstock.
We didn't get on the road till then, and by the time we got to within, I don't know, miles of Bethel, the traffic was just, you know, crawling. The folks on the road, people who lived there, one would think that they would throw things at us. No! They just welcomed us.
Never before in my life did I feel so much anticipation. This is going to be so cool.
Also mehr Verkehr und plötzlich ging es überhaupt nicht mehr weiter. Aber die Leute waren alle sehr freundlich, da war kein Buchen. In Deutschland wird natürlich viel gebucht und war sehr aggressiv. Die Amerikaner, das war für mich einfach ein Erlebnis, dass ich viel freundlicher war. We were at a dead standstill for hours. People just got out and sat on the cars and started talking to each other, getting to know each other. You know, starting a long conversation about politics, about music. Before long, we felt like we had been best friends.
We were sitting on the back porch, and I got out of the traffic, and all of a sudden, it started. And I'm telling you, it never let up. We just opened the one door, but you couldn't, man. It's impossible. And we let 40 or 50 people at a time. They'd get their groceries and whatever they needed, let them out the back, and then open up the door. Another 15. And these people somehow walked 4, 5, 6 miles. Where's the Woodstock? Where's the Woodstock?
This sight is hard to believe. We're over White Lake in the midst of this music festival and camp. We're up over the streets now.
We were on the same highway. Cars were stopping. And we realized that this was parking for the concert. So we got out of the car and started walking. And we saw people setting up lawn chairs to watch this spectacle. It looked like this whole part of New York State was just being turned upside down by this event.
The traffic is terrible. And it's backed up from White Lake right back to us. I mean, there's way down the and there's no place to park. There are things full.
They're announcing the radio that you can get there and, you know, don't go. They were saying, don't go.
You can't get in, it's already overcrowded, and they're shutting it down, and turn around and go home. And nobody's turning around.
They sort of increased their desire more than anything. Say one way or another, we'll get there.
It was mind-boggling.
Coming over the hill, I'm feeling the energy of that crowd. There's something that I'll never forget. There was so much power in it.
Come on, give a smile on the
blood. It was indescribable. The feeling that came over me of warmth. And oh my God, there are this many people in the world that think like I think. There are all these people. I never knew there were that many people in the world.
Once we got there, the fences were just trampled. We walked up that hill and we saw, you know, all these people. Our age, looked like us, dressed like us. Us. I mean, it was just, it was like, you know, meeting your brothers and sisters. It was really beautiful.
Come on, smile, brother, everybody get together. Let alone one another, light it up.
There are people 5 miles away sitting on the highway with tickets who've driven 13,000 miles. Whatever has to be done to make it right, this is wrong.
It was obvious we were in big deal. After having worked that afternoon, trying to organize people to put the fence up, I actually pounded a new post myself. I realized it wasn't going to happen. We weren't going to be able to ring at a mile of perimeter.
What are you going to tell them? A few 100,000 people are sitting in your field when you're supposed to be collecting money from them. Go back out and come back in when we get the tickets and finish the fences and the rest of it.
You would have to be able to raise the
money. That's what it is. Artie came up with, can't we get a whole bunch of girls and put them in diaphanous gowns and give them collection baskets and send them out into the audience?
It's the most ludicrous thing I had ever heard in my life. There's a business venture. It was dead. And I don't know why, but sort of curious calm overcame us, and it seemed like the gates just weren't really what was important to me anymore.
It's a free concert from now on. That doesn't mean that anything goes, but that means that we're going to put the music up there for free. What it means is that the people who are back here say you put up the money for it, they're going to take a bit of a bath, a big bath. That's no right, that's true, so you get hurt. But what it means is that these people have in their head, they serve out there, they hold a lot more important, and music is in a dollar.
The roar that went up from that crowd was incredible. Despite its roots in trying to be a capitalist enterprise, the concert was liberated.
You don't even have to bother bringing your tickets or anything. It's there to collect them. There's no way they can. They got a fence that's like half up, and there are people just sitting in that field. It's really beautiful.
We're still waiting for the arrival of Route 1. Now, please care with us. Due to the traffic problem, we're going to have to stop at the later.
The bands are all in different hotels, and if you tried to drive down to the site, it would take you 6 hours to do it. The same obvious as we need helicopters. But then Richie Haven showed up, and it was like, Richie, he's going now. And he said, I'm not scheduled to go on the radio. I said, Richie, we don't have anybody else.
I actually was afraid to go on first, basically because I knew the concert was late, and I didn't want to get big against all that music. You know, don't do this to me. Don't put me in front of your problem like this, you know. My bass player isn't even here. But I went on, you know, and it was beautiful.
Hey, you can be able to tell me what's that to see. Marching into this field of county corn. Looks like Harrison Johnny with his play block in his hand. Marching to the county corn war.
Once the festival started, we opened the food stands, and a throng of people came running up the hill. There were too many people, too many arms for GM, so we just started handing out hamburgers. And people began to shower us with joints. I had one in each pocket, one in my ear, and I was smoking two at a time. I got really high.
I was on stage, something like 2 hours, and nobody else is at a bar. I did about 4.5, 5 hour girls, you know, till I had nothing else to sing, and then freedom was created right there on the stage. That's how freedom was created. On the stage was the last thing I could think of, to sing. I made it up.
I remember hearing Richie Higgins playing Freedom. I was way up on the hill and I heard it and I was transformed.
Freedom! 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 Freedom!
It's a good word to use. And it wasn't just the freedom of being able to stop the giant, it was the freedom of being able to be who you were, not feeling that somebody was going to judge you. Word for anything. Yeah,
left the backstage area and I went into the crowd and I went up and I got in the middle of the crowd and staff was like, wow, look what we've done. We actually pulled it off and it's happening.
The audience reaction is just wonderful. It just brought the spirit right up and you felt, okay, it's over. You're going to be okay. And then, thank God, we got the helicopter rotation working and started to get people in.
We apologize for the noise and the choppy-choppy that seems there are a few cars blocking the road, so we're flying everybody in.
Once the artists started arriving, the first band to go on was Sweet One, by the Acoustic Band.
All through the crowd there were matches, cigarette lighters, candles that looked like fireflies.
He was illuminating, not as bright as the blue light on Joan Baez on the stage, but he immediately was the sun of that crowd. There was nothing in that but human being.
Joan Baez was just wonderful. See, the end of that night in a drizzle, I looked out and field and saw all these people, and I was like, let's go see.
Maybe the best thing you've ever been to do, unless you have a tent or some place specific to go to, is carve yourself out a piece of territory, say goodnight to your neighbor, say thank you to yourself for making this the most peaceful, most pleasant day anybody's ever had in this kind of music.
John, I got out behind us. We were on about to a hill that was, you know, maybe a mile away from the stage. And in the distance, you could see hundreds, thousands of little campfires. It's like an army of rescue for an enormous battle there. It was really beautiful. That moment stayed with me forever.
I'm Gene Honda, along with Laura Savini. And this is the vantage point from where you just saw...
This program contains content which may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer discretion is advised.
I guess the reason we're here is music. Let's have some music, ladies and gentlemen. Well...
The first day of the festival, there were a lot of people there, maybe 250,000, 300,000 people. That was the folk day. The second day of the concert was the rock and roll day. That's when everyone showed up. They wanted to see who they're playing dead later that night. So the crowd grew by about 100,000.
Holy, this thing is way beyond what we ever could have imagined. We just felt like we were going to get crushed up against the stage, and we didn't really want that. So, like a lot of people, we just decided to go out exploring, walking around to see what was going on.
On the periphery of the crowd was a two-lane highway of people, and it never stopped moving for the entire festival. People were going to the food stands, they were coming from the bathroom, they were going God knows where.
She just started wandering. Come across all kinds of stuff. A lot of it was like just walking the boardwalk and seeing the sights and taking it and seeing it.
Walking around, I remember thinking, holy, there are a lot of breasts here. Most of the nudity I'd seen previously was in Playboy, and small bits on a hot date, but, you know, really not much. And there were a lot of people, girls and guys, who were very, very open with their lack of clothing.
especially down by the water.
The good thing about swimming dip is we all ran in. Fat, skinny, it didn't matter. Nobody looked, nobody cared. It was just plain fun. Es war mir auch unverständbar. Ich habe oben ohne in München im Schwimmbad nackt gebadet. Aber in Amerika, du hast oben ohne wolltest und dann haben die Polizei und du solltest verhaftet werden. Und dann plötzlich im Busstopp sind alle nackt rumgelaufen. Das ging irgendwie nicht in meinen Kopf rein.
I was 17, normally my jaw would be on the floor staring. But everything, to a certain extent, is beyond belief to begin with. Nothing surprises you. There was kind of a path in the woods where people had all kinds of different shops set up. They were selling, you know, musical stuff, and things like beads and crafts that they had made, hand tie-dyed clothing, blown glass pipes and stuff like that. Kind of head shops in the woods, sort of thing. There was one table set up where they were just selling pot. We were well supplied.
Saturday was kind of a day where, you know, we walked like a couple of miles checking things out. There was so much happening that that was almost as interesting as seeing the music.
Just to the other side, it was a wooded area. Lots of a hog farm was set up. This was common wood. You know, I had heard about it, but I'd never seen it in action.
We'd been living in a group for years by then, and it was quite an amazing experiment. You know, the understanding is the people around me are all part of the same spirit.
There was like a couple hundred of them, with all these kids running around. They had teepees and yurts and all these various little, you know, dwellings.
The whole bunch of all these exotic buses that they had painted up. It was magical.
And the hog farm had built a small stage, and there was music there as well. I didn't realize that at first.
There was always some kind of musical jam going on over there. Away from the actual concert, the hog farm was in the center of gravity for the festival. The hog farm turned out to be an interesting choice for security. They didn't call themselves a police force. They called themselves a fleets force. They substituted, hey, you do this with, would you please do this? Would it be all right with you? And so forth. The police chiefs were myself and Tom Law. We turned it into fun.
They gave a nice flavor to the festival. We paid them $18,000. Remember that?
I don't remember paying them. I thought we just started the jet.
Maybe that's what it cost. Maybe that's what the $18,000.
They did it just because they wanted to be there, because they felt that it would be useful. They're really nice people.
Back to the concert. I used to tell me I was not going to miss all these incredible people.
Come on, brothers,
you're out
in the land. You have to go
up. My boyfriend was Scottish. And, you know, we had this future planned out, and it certainly didn't include him coming out and buy that. And so, you know, Country Joe McDonald got up on Saturday afternoon. We were right there with him. We were 400,000 kids on the hillside who all were vehemently against the war, and you know, for me it was like, these are our people. We found our people.
Are you enjoying the
festival? Yeah, that's right.
Why did you come?
professor.
To see the best music in the world, right?
The only boring moment I had that weekend was when Santana was about to appear, and I didn't know who Santana was. And Santana was woke.
You got drawn into this music. The song was Soul Sacrifice, which most of us had never heard before.
Listening to it, I felt like we had gone from civilization to some place where there were no rules. And some people took the freedom to extreme places.
People were there to have good fun. And they were doing it.
Yeah, man, not drugs.
It's mostly marijuana on sheets. And LSD. One girl told me that just standing still, she was getting stunned. And my guess was that within 1,000 feet of the stage, everybody was stunned.
There were a lot of people who took a lot of drugs in very strenuous circumstances and were incapable of dealing with that. The free contents were oases.
Wavy Grady and the Hot Fun were taking care of bed trips. Free contents had been set up where people could lie down. And folks from the Hot Fun were there and were just holding people's hands and just really being able to guide them through it.
We're telling him, you know, it's going to be cool, man. It's going to wear off. He took a little acid and it's going to wear off. And then when somebody was near normal to rock and roll, we said, hold it. Now, you see that brother coming through the door? That was you 3 hours ago. Now you go and help him out. And that's the way the scene regenerated itself.
They always knew that there were going to be medical problems. And they had prepared themselves as best they could. But like everything else at the festival, they were woefully understaffed. And an emergency situation was developing.
One of our people came rushing up to me and said, we're out of medical supplies. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. All the panoply of medical situations you could encounter will happen during the course of 72 hours. It's just what happens in a city of 400,000 people. This is a medical disaster in the making.
Leaving aside for the moment, those people who were diabetics, who needed insulin and so forth, the chasm was profound.
We got a call from the governor's chief of staff telling us that Rockefeller was considering sending in the National Guard.
Nelson Rockefeller's office, he was the governor at the time, was in pretty constant communication with festival people. And Rockefeller was always threatening to send in the troops. They said it was a danger to the community, it was a danger to public health, it was a danger to any damn thing they could think of. They wanted to get rid of him. And they were stupid enough to believe they could mobilize the National Guard and move these kids out. And I kept saying, there's only one way to do this. Let's play it through. In the end, it was the assistant to the governor who got it. And he said, what can we do?
Why are there army helicopters flying overhead? You know, it looks like what I saw on the news every night in, the pictures from Vietnam.
Seeing that they were military helicopters was very disconcerting. You didn't know really why they were flying in. You know, is this the start of...